Hello and welcome to the Intrafish Podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, Editor-in-Chief. I am joined today by Executive Editor John Fiorillo, Senior Business Reporter Rachel Sapin, and Correspondent John Evans. Well, there's no question of what we're going to be talking about today. It has been a full week of watching the tragedy in Ukraine unfold. Only just over a week since Russia invaded that country. And the implications on the human scale, of course, have been just beyond unimaginable. But of course, we're journalists covering the seafood sector, and there have been many, many major implications that are shaping up for this industry, not least for just global trade, but also as Russia faces all these sanctions and all this punishment for its actions across the world, that will likely have impacts on some of the most important seafood that makes its way to consumers' plates. So let's go ahead and start discussing what we know, what we've written about. It's just been a hectic, chaotic week. We've hit it from every single side. John Fiorillo, why don't we start with you? And why don't we kick off the discussions about the sanctions and how this is already impacting, in particular, the pollock and cod, the whitefish sector, and what still unknowns could be to come.
Yeah, well, obviously pollock and cod are big players in this because Russia is a big player in both of them. There are no direct bans on buying Russian origin product. Most of it goes through China and gets reprocessed. And in the U.S., for example, that product is sold through retail breaded fish brands, Mrs. Paul's and Vandekamp's, and at least one major seafood restaurant chain, that being Captain D's, also has traditionally used the product as well. So no direct word as far as them immediately changing their behavior. ConAgra, which owns the retail brands, told us they were, you know, keeping up on it, watching it, and will move accordingly to government decisions. So, what is happening on the fishing grounds in Russia appears to be that because of the collapse of the ruble and the sanctions on the banking system over there, that the ability to get paid for, to finance operations is eroded from what we can tell significantly, to the point that it's crippling.
So how realistic, I mean, obviously this is the question on the entire world's mind, so I don't expect you to know the answer to that, Rachel, but let's just talk about, let me phrase it another way. What types of pressure is building in the U.S. for these sanctions? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of pressure for seafood companies on both the West and East Coast of the United States to sanction Russian seafood imports. And lawmakers are even looking to ban Russian seafood imports. Part of their reasoning there, these are Alaska lawmakers, Senator Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, they say that Russia has banned U.S. seafood imports since 2014. And I believe that's tied to what happened in Crimea with that. So, they say it's been a long time coming. And obviously, there are all the human rights violations going on right now. And even companies on the East Coast who do import the majority of Russian pollock that comes into the U.S. are increasingly agreeing that they are okay taking the financial hit, and they would like to see the U.S. Put sanctions on Russian imports, pollock in particular. at this point.
Now, you know, there's been, in the U.S. at least, the main species that become affected by any sort of ban on this would be crab species. A lot of Russian crab gets imported into the U.S. A lot of Russian pollock and cod, as you mentioned, John, imported into the U.S. There are incentives, obviously. This isn't simply a moral issue necessarily for some of these companies, or at least it may be. But let's also make sure that we highlight there is an economic benefit to Russian seafood not appearing on the U.S. market for many U.S. companies. So that's kind of important, I think, to note. But John Evans, you spoke to some analysts about Highliner. Highliner is a major Canadian processing company, and they certainly purchase Russian fish. And they, as a public company, I'm sure have gotten a lot of questions and pressure from shareholders. And just in general, Canada has taken a very strong stance against the Russian invasion. So what were the analysts telling you about the position Highliner is put in right now?
Yeah, I mean, like Highliner, not that many analysts were talking, including BMO Capital Markets, but they did put out a note to investors late on Wednesday, and BMO calculates that at the end of 2021, Highliner held inventory spanning 166 days worth of purchasing, meaning they'd be covered for the next several quarters, but at the same time, they warned if the current global geopolitical situation continues, there could be disruption to the global supply chain for key species such as cod and pollock, Pacific cod and pollock. And a second analyst said that, you know, that down the road, also, it's going to be a problem for them. His exact words were, it is an issue for sure for them. So, yeah, they may be all right for now. I suppose it depends, Drew, how long the conflict, which as a journalist in Russia, we were just discussing before we came onto the podcast, you're not allowed to use the word conflict or war, but it depends how long the conflict goes on for.
Right. And it's, you know, replacing Russian pollock, which is a massive, massive resource. It's a massive supplier of what ends up in fish fingers / fish sticks and all kinds of products across the world, especially in Europe and the United States. It will create absolute chaos from a supply perspective for this fish. If that fish cannot be imported into any major country, it'll stay on the domestic Russian market. That may be a part of what Putin's government has been angling for, to ensure that Russia's self-sufficient. In fact, I know that's part of what he's been angling for. And I know that Russian efforts to export fish outside of Russia isn't always looked at favorably. At least I think that the goal for the government would be to keep that product on the market. But there are so many challenges with logistics in getting Russian fish to Russian people. It's not a fish that people are particularly fond of eating in Russia. It's not really a traditional fish to be consumed. So it's not like the Russian companies can easily switch and find, you know, just domestic markets for it. Likewise, Rachel, you talked to your sources in the Alaska pollock sector on the U.S. side, and it's not like they can run in and fill the void either.
No, yeah, they are pretty stretched already. They are making up this year in terms of processing. They've been catching up on processing their more popular products like deep skin and PBO fillets, but they're just getting caught up. They have lots of customers in the U.S. and globally who want that product. And I was speaking with one of the major processors in Alaska who said, you know, they don't, even if some European countries want Pollock, you know, they already have contracts and commitments with other customers that they can't really break. And on top of that, you know, this is just going to send already high Pollock prices even higher, which, you know, is just a little worrisome to some of the producers because, you know, it means maybe European customers might turn to other whitefish because, you know, most consumers still kind of just look at fish sticks as whitefish in general, which can be a lot of other types of fish than pollock.
You know, along those lines, Drew, well, this isn't scientific because I just looked at it a little bit this morning, but Lent has begun in the U.S. and it's always a big time for, you know, whitefish sandwiches at fast food restaurants and just in general, right? So I'm noticing this year, and I don't, it's not related to Russia per se. It might be related to what Rachel just referred to as, you know, the tighter supply and the higher prices in pollock generally right now. But you're not seeing pollock as much in these promotions. I'm noticing a lot of shrimp, which would make sense because shrimp's affordable right now. So it just struck me as, it's probably something I'll look into next week a little bit more. But I think, you know, what Rachel was saying is the price is already driving some buyers to look at alternatives, particularly in this Lenten season when they usually buy a lot.
Right. And I mean, we're also, when you're speaking of price inflation, and maybe that does have the supply availability, John, may have something to do with the kinds of fish they're using in promotions. But speaking of inflation and price inflation, John Evans, shipping now, which has already been so expensive and so challenging, it's going to further pressure raw material prices because already the invasion has led to plenty of hiccups, and the sanctions have led to major liners like Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd and MSC saying they will not ship to and from Russia. So far, the exception has been food. But our colleagues at Tradewinds just reported a story that that we'll be picking up as well, that Maersk is now concerned that some of the food supplies that they're carrying to and from Russia could even spoil because of these delays.
Yeah, and I've just done some calculations on the back of an envelope, and looking at the oil price before Putin's the invasion which Vladimir Putin ordered on the 23rd of February. Since then, oil prices have risen 22.6% by my calculations. So, I mean, the shipping companies are saying now that they're going to add, I can't remember the term exactly what it is. It's got the word bunker in it. But anyway, these new surcharges that they're going to add are because of a rise in fluctuating fuel costs, as they put it. So 22.5% seems like a very steep rise to me in such a short time. And as you say, all of this will have to be factored into prices. And then, as the Nomad were talking about in their press conference in the last few days, or the investor call in the last few days, you know, it'll have to pass on consumers, and they're talking about passing it on in a scattered way because they didn't want to do it all in one go.
Yeah, well, that's going to be, I think, the big challenge everyone is going to have to face is, already there was so much inflation, and already everyone is paying more for their food and fuel and everything. So there has to be some real fears, like you said, Rachel, that at some point consumers say, I'm going to switch over to X, Y, or Z product. But I don't know what that would be because everything is on the rise, it seems. I'll just note too, John, speaking of Nomad and Young's, Nomad owns Bird's Eye and Igloo. So between those two companies, you have a big chunk of the frozen fish that's sold in the EU and the United Kingdom. But neither one has quite come out and said they will not purchase Russian fish, correct? Although Nomad said they have some plans.
Yeah, and I mean, Nomad said during their call that they had already made preparations and they could switch to wild caught or farmed alternatives, and that they could amend the formulas for their recipes. So I wouldn't say they sounded relaxed about it, but they were certainly trying to calm the waters a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting. I mean, I just put this kind of as an open question to all of you. What are we to make of all these companies coming out and calling for sanctions? Should more companies be doing it? You know, again, as I mentioned too, it does end up punishing in some ways Putin, and it certainly every little bit, I think, ratchets up the pressure, which I see as generally a positive thing. But, you know, what are we to make of the company's responsibilities to come out and say something? If they don't, is that a moral failing, or is that just a up to them? I don't know. Rachel, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely just like personally, you know, I kind of think, and it was a totally different situation, but I think to like COVID and, you know, the rumors swirling around that coming out of China and how, you know, Chinese Americans in the U.S. were feeling the effects of that and feeling racism and xenophobia. And I just always worry if we get to like, oh, all Russians are bad, we could see that spilling over, you know, into Russians that you are very likely anti-Putin in the U.S., you know, that don't deserve, you know, all of our hatred that builds up on social media. So, yeah, I always kind of worry about that part of it, that, you know, it's like we can get really zealous really fast, and a lot of that can turn into a really unnecessary xenophobia and racism. So I think that is a concern. Not sure really what else I say in terms of a guidance on that at this point, but it's just come up for sure as a concern in my brain thinking about all this.
Yeah, and on the other side, you know, you have somebody like Keith Decker, who was former CEO of a whitefish producer in New Bedford, Blue Harvest, and sits on the board of Pollock Giant American Seafoods, who came out in one of our stories and said that, you know, U.S. companies importing fish from Russia should not wait for the U.S. government to take a stand. And he said we should, you know, immediately stop buying from Russia anything that we're buying, because in his eyes, it's tacit support of Russia. And, you know, there's definitely that element of thought on this as well. You know, it's a tough question, because if a U.S. company does something like that and it affects their operations to the point that they have to lay off, say, U.S. workers, you know, now we have a, you know, trickle-on effect. And so it's a really tough one. But at the same time, you know, we've seen this before when one nation begins invading others throughout Europe, and we know where that's headed. So morally, it's a tough one. I don't have an answer for sure, but you know, I can see Rachel's side. I can see all sides of this, and it's so sad no matter which way you look.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been pretty swift. I mean, I'm just off the top of my head here, we've had a Canadian company, Icewater Seafoods, no longer importing whitefish from Russia. We've had Baca Frost no longer exporting salmon. Chile is now thinking about alternative markets, though I don't think they've individually as companies made decisions yet. But John Evans, you can speak to that in just a moment. And we also, as you mentioned, Rachel, this whole conglomerate of Massachusetts companies, certainly U.S. West Coast companies. Some of them have come out as well. I mean, there's just been a lot of companies around the world have are making these statements that they won't be doing business with Russia. And so I expect that we will see more, but I also expect that there are certainly companies that are really having to calculate this carefully. Some, I think, would prefer to just not talk about it, of course, and sit on the sidelines. But I don't think there's any way that they'll be able to do that, in particular when you have this level of outrage. I do, you know, I want to talk about Ukrainian people and Ukrainian companies. We've been so fortunate to have some people in Ukraine that have been willing to talk to us about their the reality on the ground there. I have been very lucky to have gotten to know the GM of Polar Seafood Ukraine. Polar Seafood's a Danish seafood company. And Polar Seafood Ukraine is a partial subsidiary of theirs. And his name is Nitesh Paul, and he has been so illuminating on the conflict and what it's meant. He is based in Kyiv. As we speak, he is headed to the western part of the country with 29 members of his staff, their families, and their pets, including his own family. And just kind of over the course of the past week, it's just been fascinating and tragic, sort of staying in touch with Natasha on a regular basis about what is happening. And it does just strike me the absolute resilience and defiance and pride and love for Ukraine. He certainly carries that across and has been a representative of I think what we're seeing everywhere else. But these companies are essentially companies that people have spent their lives building up. These companies have been their life. And they have employees and colleagues that have spent their lives there, spent many years there. They have workers in their warehouses, in their factories. And there is this absolutely devastating economic toll in addition to the tragic human toll as well. And whether or not Ukraine is able to recover from all this in anytime soon, we don't know how any of this is going to play out. But it's been really fascinating to talk to people there on the ground and their experience, because it's been this mixed feeling of as I said, the human tragedy of what's happening all around them, but also just the love of what they do, the love of the companies that they either founded or worked for or their colleagues. That's just been so inspiring, and we've seen that. Rachel Sapin and I were looking at a Facebook page just yesterday of of an Alaska processor that has Ukrainian employees. A lot of Ukrainian workers go around the world for seafood processing jobs, including a lot in Alaska, a lot in Poland. And it's, you know, the little world that we cover, it's been this interesting microcosm into just how amazing people can be under the most horrible conditions and the way that they come together and support one another. So it's been a privilege to be able to speak to some of these people and to be able to report on it. I think I'll end our podcast there. We're certainly worried about the sources that we've talked to over there in Ukraine. We know that many of the people that are listening have colleagues there or customers there or suppliers there. Certainly you can always reach out to us wherever you are. We're always interested in doing the absolute best job that we can with our journalism, but particularly right now, we know how important it is that that people that want to tell their story or people that need a voice do have a place for that. And we're doing our very best to cover all the implications and all the different ways that this is impacting both people's lives and business. So yes, we're thinking about the folks in Ukraine and hoping all this comes to some kind of peaceful resolution. Thanks, everybody. It's the Boston Seafood Show next week. Myself, John Fiorillo, will be there. We're looking forward to seeing you all in person. Despite the global circumstances, it will be very, very nice to see all the colleagues, sources, friends. It's maybe at least a little bit of normalcy in some areas of our lives. So we'll look forward to that. Thanks, everybody.